A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. I don't think happy D-Day anniversary is quite the right term, but it is important, I think, to acknowledge that today is the 80th anniversary of D-Day. So many of those individuals who fought that day are gone now, even those who survived the initial beachfront assault. You know, my dad was a young man during World War II, served in the Pacific Theater. He would have been 98 this year, and he was 17 when he enlisted in the Navy. So again, the passage of time has taken so many of these individuals away from us, but the sacrifices, the heroism that was on display 80 years ago today in Normandy should not ever be forgotten or diminished. All right. Before we get to the main topic of today's program, let's also note that the Supreme Court did release some decisions today. The Rahimi case and Garland versus Cargill, not among them. So we've got a couple of weeks left in the court session, and those two cases are still outstanding. Also, the Supreme Court is scheduled to meet in conference today. We still have the Illinois gun and magazine ban cases that the court has kept a hold of for the past few weeks. We don't know what the court's going to do with those cases. I think it's unlikely that they grant cert. I think if they were going to do that, it would have happened already. I suspect that they're holding on to those cases until Garland versus Cargill is decided. That's the bump stock ban case, in which the federal government says that a non-mechanical bump stock turns a semi-automatic firearm into a machine gun. The Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals has said that AR-15s and other semi-automatic firearms are not protected by the Second Amendment because they are like machine guns. And it seems to me like that could be a case where the Supreme Court issues some guidance to the Seventh Circuit of, hey, quit treating semi-automatic firearms like they're machine guns, because they're not. But that may just be wishful thinking on my part. We will see. In conference today, however, the court is also expected to discuss Antoniuk versus James. This is one of the post-Bruin challenges to New York's Concealed Carry Improvement Act. Mm-hmm. Specifically dealing with the good moral character clause that the state is using as sort of a workaround from the prohibition on asking people if they have a justifiable need or a good cause to carry a firearm. Right now it's not, well, why do you want to carry? Now it's, well, who are you and are you worthy of exercising your Second Amendment rights? Even if you could pass a background check, you've gone through all the required training, if you've been arrested before but not convicted, if you have been maybe, you know, just the police have had to come out to your house a couple of times because music's too loud, whatever. They could use that to say, well, we just don't think that you have the type of character necessary to exercise your right to keep and bear arms. So it is possible that on Monday we hear that the court has accepted Antoniuk versus James, and we'll hear that case in the fall. I am not particularly confident that that is going to be the case. The Supreme Court has turned away every peremptory challenge to date since Bruin. Maybe this will be the exception to the rule, but fingers crossed anyway that we get some action from the Supreme Court. On today's program, however, we are going to talk about what's going on, not in New York, but what's going on in California, specifically what's going on in Los Angeles, specifically what's going on in public schools in Los Angeles, where this week a 10-year-old brought a loaded handgun to an LA elementary school. And this is not the first time that something like this has happened this year. In fact, incidents involving weapons and violence on campus are rising sharply in Los Angeles, despite or maybe because of all of the gun control laws on the books. According to the Los Angeles Times, a boy brought a loaded 40 caliber Glock 22 to campus. The gun had been reported stolen. A student who saw the boy show off the gun reported it to an adult. These sources said the district neither confirmed nor denied those details. LA Times says the gun recovery reflects an alarming increase of weapon incidents and fights at LA Unified Schools amid demands from many parents for more police and security after the school board slashed the police budget 4 years ago. How bad has it gotten? Now, the LA Times reports that the incidents involving weapons have increased sharply since students returned to in-person learning starting in March of after the pandemic shut down the school, starting in March of 2020. In the 2018-2019 school year, and that was the last full school year before the pandemic, there were 669 weapon incidents. That was a drop from 705 in the 2017-2018 school year. In 2021-2022, the incidents rose to 994. And then in the 2022-2023 school year, the number of incidents climbed again to 1,197, so almost double the number of incidents pre-pandemic. That's a nearly 80% increase compared to the pre-pandemic levels in a school system that the LA Times notes has declining enrollment. This year, through April 15th, there were 903 weapons incidents, according to the LA Times. Since then, incidents have included the May 3rd arrest of two students carrying loaded handguns around Northridge Middle School, a Washington Preparatory High School student carrying a weapon shot and killed a student just off campus on April 15th. And again, this is with all of California's restrictive gun laws in place, right? Universal background checks. So, and not just for guns, by the way, but for ammunition. So in order to acquire a firearm, even through a private seller, you're supposed to put that buyer through a background check, right? You got the 10-day waiting period. You got the ban on so-called assault weapons. You've got the gun rationing law, the 1 in 30 law. We wrote about this at Bearing Arms yesterday. And a host of other restrictions in place at the county and local level. And yet, despite all of California's restrictive gun laws that make it very, very difficult for individuals to legally exercise their right to keep and bear arms, it's no trouble whatsoever for someone as young as 10 or 12 years old to get a hold of a gun illegally and carry it to school, which to me suggests that maybe there is a problem here that gun control can't solve. So what about the issue of putting more school resource officers on campus? Well, according to the LA Times, on Tuesday at the regular meeting of the Board of Education, a delegation of parents submitted a petition with more than 4,000 signatures calling for a restoration of the reduced school police budget and a return of officers to campus. In 2020, the school board voted to cut the school police budget by 30% in the wake of the Minneapolis City Police killing of George Floyd. This was part of the Defund the Police movement. While a lot of Democratic officials have quietly backed away from their support for defunding the police as violent crime has continued to rise, and now you're starting to see Democrats adopt this tough-on-crime measure or tough-on-crime stance, at least on paper, it's not been the case with the LA Unified School District Board. They have kept those budget levels about 30% below what they were pre-pandemic. And while parents are upset, teachers' unions are also criticizing the school board, but for a very different reason. They want those cuts to go even further. Teachers Union President Cicely Myert-Cruz criticized the school board on Tuesday for not sticking by pledges to further reduce the police budget. Another union leader, Max Arias, who represents the greatest number of non-teaching workers, touted the importance of unarmed campus aides for making schools safe. Really? Unarmed campus aides, huh? The LA Times says that even when it comes to interpreting the rising number of weapons, there's debate about whether campus police would be a deterrent. Board member George McKenna has repeatedly said that having an officer on campus helps deter students from bringing weapons to school. But that's not the view of Joseph Williams, the director of Students Deserve, which recruits and assists student activists who call for defunding the police. Oh, they recruit and assist student activists. So basically, these student activists are their puppets, right? Huh, that's interesting to know. Okay. Joseph Williams says when weapons were seized, was anyone injured? No. Why? Well, because some students on that campus trusted adults enough to say, hey, this is going down and we need to address it, and folks were able to intervene. The presence of an officer would have diminished that trust, he said, making for a potentially more dangerous situation. That's right. It would be more dangerous if there was a school resource officer on campus for a student to alert, hey, Toby over there's got a gun. Right. Instead, you're supposed to contact your guidance counselor, maybe a teacher. Hey, Toby's got a gun, who may or may not call the LAPD at that point to deal with Toby and his illicitly obtained firearm. Right. Sorry for any LA students named Toby who have not brought a gun to school, by the way. I don't know why I use that name. I confess, I don't get the California crazy in general. I truly don't get the opposition to having school resource officers. I mean, I know what the opposition is. Well, it's the school-to-prison pipeline. You know, you have police on campus, and then there's going to be a law enforcement response. And instead of Toby getting suspended from school or, hell, maybe getting a gold star for bringing a gun to school, he's going to get, criminal charges, and then Toby's life is ruined. And, well, we just got rid of the police. It would all be better. Or so goes the theory. I don't buy it. to be honest. Now, I don't want my kids, and it should be noted, my kids are now out of school. They have gone through school. They're done. They've gotten their diploma. No more do I have to deal with public school craziness, at least on a firsthand basis. But having said that, did I feel better knowing that there was a sheriff's deputy stationed outside of my daughter's high school? Yeah, I did. And I wish that I lived in a county where the police staffing was large enough that we could have had a uniformed presence on every campus. But that's simply not the case. L.A. County, they don't have that same issue. It's not a lack of funding. I mean, it kind of is a lack of funding, but it's an intentional lack of funding that is leading to fewer police officers there on campus. As it is, even under the old standard, when the Department for the Unified School District was, you know, quote unquote, fully funded, there was basically an officer stationed at every high school who was also supposed to split time with the nearest middle school. So not every campus in the LA Unified School District had a uniformed school resource officer even before the budget cuts. And things have gotten worse now that the budget has been reduced by 30%. Again, is it a coincidence that as the SRO budgets have been reduced, the number of weapons incidents, the number of violent fights on campus have increased dramatically in LA? I don't think so. It might not be the entire, look, that might not tell the entire story, right? I'm not saying that it's 100% because of the police budget reduction and the lack of school resource officers on campus, but I don't think that it's helping anything any more than California's ridiculous gun control laws are helping here. You know, you've got teenagers who, despite all of California's restrictive gun control laws, are able to easily acquire a firearm. In fact, it is so much easier to get a gun illegally in California than it is to get one legally. I guarantee you that the individuals who have been arrested in recent weeks on LA school district campuses did not wait 10 days before they picked up the gun that they had illegally purchased. I guarantee you they did not go through a background check when purchasing ammunition on the black market. They didn't abide by the one gun a month law. They didn't abide by California's restrictive concealed carry laws, right? As long as you're willing to ignore the law, it's easy to get a gun in California. Really easy. So easy a 10-year-old can do it. Again, as long as you don't mind violating the law. And frankly, if you're a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old or a 14-year-old, why would you care about violating the law? If you're caught, what's going to happen to you? Chances are, not much, if anything at all, because this is California that we're talking about. So, no, it is not simply just the lack of SROs on campus that is leading to an increase in crime and violent incidents and weapons being brought onto campus. Again, more than almost 1,200 incidents last school year, more than 900 incidents through April of this year. We're talking multiple incidents every school day across the LA Unified School District. That should be, by the way, a huge blaring headline in the LA Times every day. But it's not. Because I don't really think the media, I mean, look, it's a one-day story, though, kind of reported in context. And I don't want to ding the LA Times too bad. They actually did a decent job in reporting the story. But this is going to, again, is this going to be a one-and-done story? Or is this going to be something that is brought up on a daily basis, reminding folks of the problems within the school district that have not been addressed through either public safety efforts and certainly have not been solved through California's gun control laws? That remains to be seen. But once again, California's gun law is proving to be a huge failure in stopping individuals from illegally obtaining a firearm. Doing a bang-up job of stopping people from getting one legally. But when it comes to breaking the law, as long as you're willing to do that, you can get a gun in a matter of seconds. Let's turn our attention to today's recidivist report, our armed citizen story, our good deed of the day. We'll start with the recidivist report, a very interesting story out of New Orleans. This from, I believe, WWL TV, Channel 4. New Orleans DA's office granted multiple breaks to violent criminals. Now, before we get into this story, remember, constitutional carry is set to take effect in Louisiana on the 4th of July. You've had New Orleans officials for the past few months, ever since constitutional carry was signed into law by Governor Jeff Landry, who have argued that New Orleans should be exempt. Either the entire city should be exempt, or at least the fringe quarter, the downtown area, you know, the touristy areas of New Orleans should be exempt from constitutional carry. A concealed carry license should be required. You've even had some folks suggest they should just be giant gun-free zones. The Louisiana legislature has not acquiesced to those demands, and for good reason. I mean, again, why carve out areas where you're going to have a lot of law-abiding people who want to be able to protect themselves? New Orleans has never been the safest city in the country, so there's good reason if you're traveling to New Orleans why you might want to have a firearm with you. Now, I would encourage you, if you're planning on enjoying Bourbon Street and having as much to drink as you possibly can and still walk in a semi-straight line, don't carry a firearm. Don't bring a gun with you. Just as you have designated drivers, maybe you have a designated carrier who doesn't drink and who is able to keep watch over the rest of the group and provide for their safety if need be. Maybe that's one way to deal with it. I don't know. But you certainly don't need to issue some sort of carve-out to the state's constitutional carry law, particularly when, again, there are problems here with the criminal justice system going light on individuals who are not allowed to possess a firearm to begin with. WWL starts with a story from a woman named Debbie DeSell. Somebody had broken into her son's truck and had stolen her gun last March. Turns out the guy who was arrested was the man that her son had taken under his wing and hired to help set up booths for conventions. She said, I wanted to hurt him. I did. I was so upset. She and her son knew that Nicholas Brown was a felon, had an extensive drug history, including prison time after convictions for heroin, methamphetamine, and probation violations. And her son, again, was trying to help him out, trying to do the right thing, right? It's hard for people with a felony record to find employment. And Debbie DeSell's son said, you know what, I want to do the right thing here. DeSell wondered, how could somebody that he was trying to help do this to him so blatantly? Her son, at one point, even got a confession, basically a confession in a text message, reading, I'm going to get it for you. I'm going to get it for you even if I have to buy a brand new one, which as a felon, again, not allowed to do. Now, when Brown was arrested, he was charged with being a felon with a firearm, in addition to burglary charges. Under Louisiana law, there is a minimum 5-year sentence for being a felon in possession of a firearm. So back on April 8th, DeSell went to court, ready to testify, Brown's trial, and she said, I saw him sitting on a bench with his attorney signing paperwork. The DA walked up to me and said that a deal had been made. There wasn't going to be a trial. She also learned that there wouldn't be any prison time. The DA's office allowed Nicholas Brown to take a plea deal to attempted possession of the firearm, right? Dropping the felon in possession of a firearm charge. And Judge Marcus DeLarge sentenced Brown to 2 years of probation. Debbie DeSell said she insisted on giving a victim impact statement. And when she did, she said, how can you do this when I have him admitting that he stole a gun? WWL reports that DeSell had stumbled across a hidden and rarely discussed trend at New Orleans criminal court: leniency for dozens of defendants facing the 5-year minimum for being a felon with a firearm. Rafael Goynech, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission, says you would assume that they're getting at least 5 years. And when we look at the data, we're seeing that that's not necessarily the case. WWL also highlighted the case of Darnell Hunter, 33 years old, a repeat felon, battling mental illness and drug addiction, when he was arrested for an attempted robbery with a firearm. He pleaded guilty as charged to being a felon with a firearm. Yet, as WWL reports, despite being rearrested in two brutal stabbings, he was given probation through a legal provision known as a downward departure from the mandatory minimum. After his release, Hunter was rearrested in another stabbing, this one a fatal stabbing. Gwinnett says Darnell Hunter is a prime example of this, but he is by no means the only example of this. There are dozens and dozens every year cases that fall into this same category. WWL reports that court records show, in addition to the DA's office agreeing to downward departures, prosecutors also offer plea bargains to attempted possession of a firearm by a felon, which is a conviction that can carry probation. Gwinnett says, when you see attempted possession of a firearm by a convicted felon, it's just a get-out-of-jail-free plea. That was the deal that was offered to Brown, along with a sentence of probation, leaving victims like Debbie DeSell to wonder, how can you agree to an attempted possession of a stolen firearm by a felon when he admitted to stealing the gun and writing? Where's the attempt? Where's the attempt? Now, how common is this? Well, according to WWL, a statistical analysis by the Metropolitan Crime Commission in New Orleans shows that out of 286 felons with gun cases in 2022 and 2023, just about one-third received the mandatory minimum five-year sentence. It was more common for somebody who had originally been charged with felon possession of a firearm to get probation than to get that five-year mandatory minimum sentence. That's amazing. Now, WWL points out, records show that most of those defendants have stayed out of trouble. But they also know that dozens have been rearrested, including individuals like Darnell Hunter. DA's office in New Orleans told WWL that Hunter's case, like so many others, quote, there is no crystal ball, saying that none of these matters was a slam dunk. When you've got somebody basically admitting to stealing a gun and saying, hey, I'm going to get it back for you, and if I can't get it back for you, I'm going to get you another gun, that's pretty slam dunk, right? Gwinnett says he wants to see the DA's office pursue these cases more aggressively. He says when they're back in the streets, many of them get arrested within a short period of time for other serious felony offenses. Pointing to Taylor Smith, caught last year, felon with a gun, pleaded guilty to carrying a gun with illegal drugs, got probation. Rearrested last month, dealing drugs in the French Quarter. This time he had a illegal machine gun, so he had a little giggle switch there. Malcolm Wiley Jr. pleaded guilty to being a felon with a gun in 2022, given a downward departure and probation. Turned up wanted by police in the fatal shooting of a 14-year-old in January. Wiley himself was apparently killed in March. Murtis Wade pleaded guilty last year to attempted possession of a gun by a felon after he was caught in possession of a stolen pistol. Got probation in October, booked in March for second-degree murder. Spokesman from the DA's office says, firearms cases often come with some of the most challenging facts to present to jurors and prove beyond a reasonable doubt. We aggressively accept cases and pursue felony dispositions when the facts warrant in our effort to remove firearms from the streets. See, that's the thing. Remove firearms from the streets. A gun is an inanimate object. It's the person behind the gun that we should be talking about. And again, most people possessing firearms are responsible. They're not criminals. They're not going to commit a criminal act with that firearm. But when you have somebody, again, with a pretty lengthy criminal history, is it really that the case is just difficult to prosecute? Or is it really, again, this attitude that the gun is a bigger problem than the violent felon? And I suspect that that actually is the issue at the DA's office there in New Orleans, that they are more focused on taking guns off the street than removing violent felons from society. All right, on to today's armed citizen story. From North Georgia, where police say a man broke into a home, stole some change, used it to buy booze, went back to the house, drank himself into oblivion, only to be woken up by an armed couple. Yeah, it happened this Tuesday in Livonia, Georgia. Investigators say the man forcefully entered the home when the homeowners were away, went through their belongings. Police said inside he found the homeowner's jar of change and decided to take that change and purchase, quote, copious amounts of adult beverages. I don't know how much change there was there, but enough apparently for copious amounts of booze. After purchasing said adult beverages, police in Livonia said, he decided to return to the residence and consume the copious amounts of adult beverages, causing him to pass out on the bedroom floor. Short time later, the homeowner's parents arrived, armed with a rifle, held the suspect at gunpoint while they called the police. The suspect was arrested, charged with burglary. Livonia police suggested several lessons could be learned from the incident. One, don't get intoxicated and pass out inside the residence that you're allegedly burglarizing. And two, if you do allegedly commit a burglary, don't allegedly burglarize a residence that is protected by parents who believe in the Second Amendment. good advice to follow. The number one is most important, right? Just stay out of other people's houses. Don't break into a house. The Second Amendment shouldn't have to implicate that. But yeah, if you do break into a house in a state like Georgia, be prepared for an armed response, not just from law enforcement, but by the homeowners as well. All right. Today's good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. I love this story. This is so great. Man reunited with a box filled with memories after losing it 10 years ago on a canoe trip. How many of us have been out on the water at some point and something that we care about falls into the water and there it goes, never to be seen again? That was, it's what Kurt Klinger thought happened a decade ago in Scott County, Missouri. He and his wife, Denise, were on a float trip down the Jack's Fork River with a friend, and there was an incident. The canoe started taking on water, kind of got tipped over. Kirk says the ammo box broke free, floated away. This was in October of 2014. He said, we got swept under this tree. My friend was in a position where he was getting pulled under the tree. I had gotten up on top of the tree. And that's when I saw the ammo box at the cord that it was on. And I saw the cord break and I saw it floating away. And I looked down at my friend and I said, better save my friend. Kirk was able to save his friend. They went back to the raft to collect everything that was there, but never could find the ammo box. He said, we just went back to the campground we were at. We licked our wounds, chalked one up to the river. The river won this one. And then about a week ago, a guy named Sean Elfrink and his wife Gina were hiking in that same area on the Blue Springs Trail in the current river. And Sean saw something down by the water. He said, I kicked it, and it busted loose, popped it open, and he said, our jaws just dropped. They had found the ammo box. And he said, while it was on top, we picked it up. The fact that your driver's license expired in 2017, we went, that's a long time ago. And the next thing I grabbed was the flashlight, and the sucker still worked. So Sean reached out to the Scott County Sheriff's Office and said, hey, I got this box full of stuff that belonged to somebody else, and was able to actually reunite with Kurt Klinger. All of the belongings that had been lost, pictures of grandkids, keys, more, everything in great condition, by the way. This is a good advertisement for this particular ammo box. He said he is most grateful that Sean and Gina made the choice to return a decade's worth of memories to the right hands. He says it's an incredible feeling to know that you had somebody so honest that found it and turned it in. Absolutely. I mean, at that point, 10 years gone by, would have been really easy for somebody to just say, hey, cool, look what I found and look what I'm going to keep. And that wasn't the case. So in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, Sean Elfrink, his wife Gina, there in Missouri, thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. I know that we've been a little guest-free this week, but we're going to make it up for you next week. We've got some fantastic guests. I'm not going to spill the beans, but I think you're going to be very excited to hear from some of the folks we'll be talking to next week on Bearing Arms Cam and Company. Don't forget to check out BearingArms.com. Between now and Monday, we're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. And if you like what you see, I would encourage you to become a VIP or VIP Gold member. Just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code SAVEAMERICA, and you can get 50% off your VIP or VIP Gold membership. You'll get exclusive content, an ad-free experience, the ability to comment on stories. But you'll also be supporting the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms. And that support is critically important in the day and age of big tech censorship, media bias, and a constant assault on our right to keep and bear arms. So thank you again for your support. We'll see you back here soon. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.